From Topps comes the all-new digital card collecting app, free to download from iTunes or Google Play, Star Wars Card Trader.
For the first time ever, collect and trade everything from legendary 1977 Star Wars cards to new cards featuring exclusive content from Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens.
All from the comfort of your mobile devices, Star Wars Card Trader.
These are the cards you're looking for.
This is Master Obi-Wan Kenobi. I regret to report that both our Jedi Order and the Republic have fallen. Our future is uncertain. But in time, a new hope will emerge.
Coffee with Kenobi presents Rebels Reactions with Dan Z and Corey Club.
All troopers, focus your fire on...
on the Jedi.
Come with us. Learn what it truly means to be a Jedi.
I'm in space. And I'm about to die.
You need an opening.
Found one.
What did he say?
He said hello, hyperspace.
Oh, and guess what? This is the podcast you're looking for.
Welcome to Rebels Reactions, where Coffee with Kenobi examines Star Wars Rebels through a critical lens. On today's show, we will be discussing Always Two There Are, Episode 5 of Season 2. Joining Jeff McGee and myself is Coffee with Kenobi blogger and great Star Wars fan, Mediocre Jedi. Welcome, MJ.
Hey, good evening. Thank you for having me on, guys.
Oh, thank you for being on. Jeff and I were just talking about this, and Corey and I have mentioned it many times, but we had the very, very good fortune of spending a lot of time with you at Celebration Anaheim, and of course we've become fast friends, as so often happens in the Star Wars universe, and we are thrilled to have you on Coffee with Kenobi. This is your first actual podcast appearance, isn't it?
It is indeed. Very first time.
Good. Well, before we get into this, tell us your overall impressions of Celebration Anaheim and just that experience as being a Star Wars fan.
You know, it was fantastic. excuse me. I'd done a couple cons before, and I kind of always felt like I was doing my own thing, going from place to place. It did not feel that way at Celebration at all. Everywhere you looked, and it wasn't just because of Star Wars, but just like-minded people, I suppose. Everyone was very friendly and welcoming. And it was also nice to finally put faces to names of people that I'd met on Twitter, which is actually since I joined Twitter in early 2014, which is where my whole Star Wars fandom and base of fellow Star Wars fanatics really exploded. So Celebration was fantastic. I cried next to Corey.
That's right.
On the Rebels panel in the season 2 trailer. So he saw me cry big tears.
I remember that was a really cool moment. That was just an amazing electric atmosphere anyway. So it's good that friends get to share stuff like that together.
Yeah, I didn't have the cool press pass, so I was over in the cheap seats crying over on the side of the stage.
Neither did I, MJ. It's okay. I was right there with you.
It was you could have probably thrown a football and hit where we were. It wasn't even that much closer, was it?
No, it was just free.
Probably not.
But now when I say throw a football, I'm talking like John Elway, not me.
John Elway. Not Jay Cutler.
Yeah, not Jay Cutler. Jay Cutler would have thrown it to like a Star Trek fan by mistake.
Well, I've heard about this football thing. That's what opened the other night for the Star Wars trailer, right?
Correct. Something like that. Right. The football. Is it soccer? I don't know what it's called. Anyway, so let's go right into this, gentlemen. Overall opinions of Always Two There Are, and MJ, we'll just start with you.
I liked it because I like Star Wars. There were some weird things to it that were maybe... weird is a strong word. Things that were a little bit different from the that I don't think I'd seen before in various Star Wars media. I got some little bits that I'd put out about that as notes as we go on through it. But seeing the kids off doing their own thing was interesting. Seeing some of the power struggles between Rex and Kanan, and then later on between, I wouldn't say it's power struggle, but the typical brotherly spats between Zeb and Ezra always part of Rebels. I'm not sure it's necessary for the things that they're up to. It's always funny to see them fighting about stuff right when they're in a tense situation, but it was interesting. It was not my favorite episode, though, to be sure.
Okay, fair enough. Jeff, what about you?
Well, this was my favorite episode so far, to follow up on what MJ just said.
There you go.
The first time I watched it, I had some of the same reactions you had, MJ, with, you know, some of the timing of the dialogue and everything. And then I had, and especially with kind of the way that that Rex was talking to Zeb. But then I had to remind myself, this is primarily aimed at kids. And when I went back and watched it a second time with that in mind, I really enjoyed the heck out of this. I thought it was a lot of fun. And it was strange because the very first part of it, we'll talk about it a little more in detail, but the first part of it did, you know, seem very much like a kid show. But then once, spoilers, Ezra gets captured, it got a little dark. It got pretty stinking dark on us. And it just reminded me that, you know, it's just like the Grimm's fairy tales, that sometimes the best children's stories are the ones that let kids know that there is darkness in the world and that's not always a bad thing, or that doesn't always turn out badly, I should say. But yeah, right. I just really loved this. I loved the way that it concluded. Had a lot of fun with it.
This is great because the force is strong here tonight, guys, because you're both at various odds of the spectrum. I'm sort of in the middle with this one. I truly am, and there are myriad reasons for it. There are things I liked. There are things that there's nothing in it I didn't like, but some of it resonated more deeply with me. Let's look at the very beginning of the episode. How do we feel about the way the entire crew of the Ghost responds to Rex in this opening scene? Jeff, what about you?
Well, I buy it. I don't have a problem with it. I think that everybody's reaction to him is fairly appropriate for their character, given their experiences. Nothing really stuck out to me particularly about it. So I guess from that standpoint, since nothing stuck out, I assume that to me that means it was all fairly appropriate.
What about you, MJ?
I think that Zeb making friends with Rex pretty quickly, they've obviously bonded a little bit, maybe not as much as Zeb and Gregor did in previous episodes. I think that to a certain degree, Sabine and Rex may have shared a little laugh over Ezra's predicament with Chopper. But obviously he's at odds, and he'll probably continue to be at odds with Kanan. I expected a little bit more out of Rex, and frankly, a little bit more out of Kanan, whether he's kind of an incompletely trained Jedi or not. I thought it was interesting that he says, you know, Jedi know when not to fight, and yet he's so easily goaded into a confrontation with Rex immediately after saying Jedi know how to control their emotions.
Right. Yeah. The confrontation, the mini confrontation, I have some thoughts on that as well. But as far as how the crew responds to Rex, I think it's fascinating. And like you, MJ, I noticed right away how Zeb and Rex have formed a bit of a early brotherhood, which I found intriguing. They've very much welcomed him. Ezra clearly has gravitated towards him, and it's not that he quite hangs on his every word, but he's certainly interested in this man, his experience, the way he carries himself. He's just a commanding presence, so to speak. And I'm glad you mentioned already the bit of the minor conflict that both Rex and Kanan have. Let's look at that more closely. Ezra is asked to lift Chopper. And they're very playful with it. You know, can I drop him? Sure. And so Sabine says, you know, just lock in. I'm not sure the exact verbiage, but he's not able to move Chopper because he's attached to the floor. And Ezra doesn't quite pick that up. And then Rex says something interesting. He says, while you're looking through the Force, don't forget to look through your eyes, which opens up this incredible debate that Kanan and Rex have. He says Ezra needs more discipline, and Rex says, well, a soldier needs to handle that. And then Kanan says, well, it takes more discipline not to fight, to which Rex says, oh, so yeah, we're just going to have the Empire, you know, just not fight. And, like, that's not going to work out at all. There's just a lot going on here. MJ, how do you feel about that? You're a soldier.
Marine, thank you.
Yes. That's right. Darn it.
It's okay. I think it's interesting considering that the last time we saw Rex, he was basically avoiding confrontation with the Empire, and yet he's so quick to kind of give Kanan a hard time for avoiding a fight with the Empire. I guess he got won over to the side of the Rebels pretty quickly.
Well, let me ask you this real quickly. Is a Jedi, in your mind, in your mind's eye, is a Jedi a Marine or a soldier?
No, I don't think that they should be. I think
are very different.
Absolutely. I think some of the and actually Ryder Waldron, who was we talked about DDS, the mouth bandit, if you will.
Yes, Ryder Waldron DDS is his official title.
Well said. Well said.
I want to make sure. Hey, he's a dentist, and I don't want people to know this, but he and I were talking about that recently about one of the differences between soldiers and Marines and Jedi, and that one of the differences is that we very much appreciate. Not throwing on my Jedi title, thank you. We very much appreciate the bonds that we form with one another on the battlefield. And I think the clones, especially if you read Karen Travis's Republic Commando series, it's very which of course is not canon, but you very clearly see that the bonds between the clones, between soldiers, between fighting forces are exceptionally strong. And that's one of the issues I have with the Jedi as a whole. And that the whole lack of attachment thing, it kind of leads you to believe that they're willing to just let people go. And of course, we see Anakin struggle with that all through the Clone Wars series and in some of the movies as well. I think they have some of the same qualities. Simply put, the Jedi should not have been Jedi generals in charge of the Grand Army of the Republic. And, you know, it's almost like there was some insidious plot to make that all happen.
Indeed. Well, and I'm interested also, and I appreciate your insights. Ezra does need discipline, but he's not unruly. He's not, you know, unmanageable. I mean, obviously, Kanan doesn't have a lot of experience training Jedi or future budding, burgeoning Jedis. But yes, there does need to be discipline. But Rex knows very well how disciplined the Jedi are. I mean, he knows it better than anybody. But the fact that he says you better let a soldier handle that, I think there's a bit of bravado. Possibly he's picking at Kanan, and possibly he needs to sort of assert himself as well. What do you think, Jeff?
I think you're absolutely right, and that's exactly how I took it. Was he's sort of testing his limits with Kanan to see just how far he can push things with him, and I loved you going back to what you said about, you know, use the Force, but also, you know, trust your eyes or whatever. Mm-hmm. Just reminded me of a phrase. I had a New Testament professor that used to use the phrase sanctified common sense when I was in college that I loved because, you know, we're given common sense for a reason. We should use it, even though, you know, we're also taught to trust, you know, to walk by faith or whatever. So that I loved that moment in there. And I think that is what really started to set Rex up in this scene as the antagonist for Kanan. And I think he was trying, like you said, trying to sort of assert himself and make sure, you know, basically if I'm going to be a part of this, you know, I'm going to make sure my voice is heard and things sometimes need to be done my way. But I right. also think that he was maybe testing Kanan a little bit, testing his resolve to see just how far he could push him.
Well, and we see that a lot. Yeah, it is a very good point. We see a lot of that at the end, which we'll get to at the end of the show. For sure. But what I interesting about this could have been a Molotov cocktail, this whole Kanan Rex thing. It could have been very trite and very tiresome very quickly, but it's not, because there's a lot of levity to it. It's serious. These guys are serious combatants. They have serious egos, but they're also good people. They're good guys. And so there's a little bit of love there. Like there's serious respect. But there's also a lot of testing. It's a very, again, a very realistic portrayal, I think, of human emotion. And I like what you said, MJ, about, you know, you may be in different factions of a particular brand of the military, but there's that respect there because you're all in there for a common goal, to protect and to serve and to look out for your fellow man, for mankind. And we see that between the two. Even when Rex calls Kanan out on the whole, you know, it takes more discipline not to fight. And Kanan's like, well, that's not how I meant it. You could see that even Kanan has a little bit of uncertainty about the Jedi dogma or their mantra. And he's very much trying to make peace with himself. Again, as I say oftentimes on this show, he's the most human of all the Jedi.
We'll also remember that Rex probably spent more time fighting alongside and seeing the thought processes of, you know, two of the greatest Jedi masters of the age.
That's right.
Than Kanan ever spent fighting alongside Depa Balaba. Rex had more time doing it.
That's right. And he was able to study with them and be a part of this incredible, important part in the history of Star Wars. So then we transition to the abandoned Republic Medical Station. And I thought it was really interesting that Ezra understands Chopper and Zeb doesn't. I think there's more to it than just the basic, you know, who can understand their puppy sort of thing. I think there's a lot of being said here about communication and the age gap between everybody.
That's interesting. I didn't think about that, about it being a technological thing. You know, kids can work a computer where, you know, an adult can't. I didn't even think about that. I just kind of took it to mean you can understand him. And because he says sort of, doesn't he? I think.
Yes. Does,
and so I sort of took that to mean, well, yeah, I can get the gist of what he's trying to say. But it does seem like he's being very specific with him, with his understanding. And so I do wonder how much of that is, you know, just sort of Ezra's inherent savvy with it, and how much of it is, you know, just being open to other forms of communication. That's a very interesting point.
What about you, MJ?
I'm kind of wondering also if Dave Filoni and crew didn't say, ooh, you know what, we're going to have Chopper off by himself with these other two non-droid speakers, even though Sabine understands Chopper, but maybe if they separated, that's going to be weird not being able to show them talking to one another. So they engineered that just for the sake of the plot moving along.
For sure. Yeah. I also think it's also true too, that, I mean, Zeb and Ezra, obviously, talk about a brotherly relationship. They clearly have it. And there were some times during season one where I wasn't sure what they were going to do with it. And I thought, oh, geez, this is going to be slapstick of palooza all the time, but it's not. It's, again, more authentic the way they are growing. And I think the fact that Ezra is more open to understanding Chopper means a couple things. It means that Ezra is a better listener because, I mean, I think we understand the beeps and boops of R2 just because we've seen these films so much. You can tell a lot by inflection and tone and basically context clues. Zeb isn't as open to that. Zeb is also a lot older. Zeb is the last of his species, the last of his race, and he's probably more jaded, even though we haven't seen a ton of evidence to support that to this point, although I have a feeling that we will. And he's also an adult, and it's very much a classic trope in children's literature that kids understand things more than adults do, and Zeb is the adult when it comes to this particular faction, the three of them. So it just shows, again, that reinforces that idea that the kids are open to more innocent things and understanding people and looking at things more empathetically, whereas adults very much have their minds set on certain things. Maybe I read a little too deeply into that, but it's, you know, it's kind of what I do.
Well, it's kind of funny. It's there. Like I said, I didn't think about it, but as soon as you said it, it makes perfect sense to me. I'll buy it.
I think it's funny that this is the group that we're in, that Zeb is considered to be the adult.
I know.
They might want to consider getting another babysitter.
Well, exactly, right. which is why they had to have these three, because it would have been a very, very different outcome if Kanan was there, I think, as well as Hera. So we have a quick flash over to the Empire, and there's an interesting conversation that happens. It only takes about 45 seconds of screen time, but you see the Empire. There's a couple of Imperial officers talking. These mystics are unnecessary, while the fifth brother is ominously staring and blinking in his very unique style, his unique fashion. But Kallus recognizes that a disturbance is to be taken seriously. Now, Kallus is a high-ranking Imperial officer, as are the other two. Kallus takes it seriously. The other two don't like mystics. Guys, what's going on here?
I think that's just a callback to A New Hope. You know, your sorcerous ways have not conjured up, you know, all of that. I think it's just
the on data tapes. That's right. It shows the very real fact out there that just because the Jedi and the Force are common things in the real world, in the Star Wars universe, it's like a ghost story or something like a
they didn't have Han Solo to tell them it's all true.
That's right.
All of it.
Right. If you have now, Twilight Company talks a little bit about that as well. Great book. Basically, without giving too much away, that, you know, people are starting to forget about such things. I thought the use of the word mystics was interesting. It's kind of like watching The Walking Dead, and no one actually uses the word zombies. Mm-hmm. They're roamers and biters or whatever the case may be. So I thought the word mystics was kind of neat. It
agreed.
It kind of expanded it a little bit.
Well, and they're sort of phasing out the old terminology from the vocabulary as well.
That's right. A good point. It may have been basically treasonous to even talk about such things.
To say it, yeah.
Yeah, maybe that was kind of a code word that people used when they talked amongst each other. And it might also show that Agent Callis, he may not believe in it either, but he's a careerist. And he knows that if his boss thinks that they're a good idea, then he does too.
And he's also worked closely with the Grand Inquisitor, and he also knows Vader very well, so... I mean, as well as you could know Vader, I suppose. So he knows that there's something to this. There's more than this mystic than a mystical, mysterious quality. It shows how private the Sith are, which we already knew. And that was reinforced very much in Tarkin, the James Luceno novel as well. So we go back. We go back to the abandoned Republic Medical Station. And Ezra and Zeb, go ahead.
I just had to throw in it. I realize that it's a callback to the Republic Medical Station from the Clone Wars and everything, but with the way they approached it and the way that they didn't, if I remember correctly, they didn't have any music when it showed us approaching, which is not something you normally see in Star Wars. It was very spacey, but much more scientific, and it completely reminded me of the Ragnar Anchorage from Battlestar Galactica.
Ooh, nice. Good callback.
Thank you.
For my money, the best sci-fi TV show ever done. And I'm talking the modern one.
Oh, yep.
Yeah, I think that was probably a given. So, again, back to the Republic Medical Station. Ezra and Zeb have this really, really fascinating exchange on the benefits of the Force in terms of finding the medical supplies. And it's played for laughs, but I think there's more going on to it than that.
Well, I think I get it. It's kind of like... You use radar to find large metal objects or reflecting type objects. You can't use it to find small things that, well, for lack of a better scientific term, that don't show up on radar. So I think Zeb, again, with his earlier things in season one where he'd throw his hands up and raise his eyebrows and say, use the Force, maybe he doesn't understand all the ins and outs. But Ezra is taking it more seriously now, and it's almost like he's being a slight bit defensive. And then with an equal bit of, hey, you know what? I'm starting to understand these things better than the average bear or Lasat.
Nice. Jeff, what about you?
I'm on board with what MJ says on this one. I think that it didn't strike me as heavily as it did you. I just was just enjoying the dialogue and enjoying the back and forth. But I think this is the point where Ezra says something like it's not necessary, but it helps, something along those lines.
Well, Zeb, he kind of waves his hand, like MJ said, use your Jedi powers. And then Ezra, the way Ezra responds, I just thought was just so beautiful. He says, it doesn't really work like that. And he's very earnest. He's unflappable. He's got this unbridled enthusiasm. And he's almost appears to be naive. And he's far from naive. His upbringing was very much the opposite of that. He's not naive at all. But he's very earnest and sincere in his belief. He's very much embracing who he is in a stronger way than Anakin ever did, I think, a very sincere way. So I found a lot of joy in the fact that while he's being ribbed, he's almost sort of like using Jedi discipline to say, you know what? I know you're messing with me. I know you're being sarcastic, but I'm going to take it as like a sincere chance to talk about what I am enjoying about this mystical energy field known as the Force. I really thought it was a beautiful, very quick scene.
I agree. Yeah. Enjoyed it.
It's nice to see him coming into his own with it.
It really is. So then Chopper, and there's a lot in this whole thing. It reminded me very much of Alien, probably, or Aliens more accurately. But there's a lot of gothic literature feel here, like the dark lighting, the sinister music, the fact that the lighting goes in and out, the power source Chopper controls, but then he doesn't have complete control over it. So there's just that feeling of uncertainty, the way the camera is panning the heroes. And then this ID-9 Seeker droid comes out, and it takes out Chopper. By the way, the production nickname on these things was a paratroid. A little bit of trivia for you.
Appropriate.
Yes. So then the Seventh Sister shows up. This is the big thing. Freddie said this is actually his third favorite episode in all of season two. And it's pretty cool. She shows up. She's got this menace. She's got this grace. The fifth brother is there too. And he wants to kill, but the Seventh Sister stops him. A lot going on in this section, guys. Tell me what jumps out to you, Jeff.
The first thing that jumped out to me was I thought her hat was silly. I know that I just seemed it does not seem menacing to me at all. That was the only thing about her that I that did not
voice,
seem the voice was amazing, and Sarah Michelle Gellar's vocal performance is outstanding. It's spot on. But yeah, I just I kept the hat was distracting to me. But she does have that very cold, calculated voice, and there's some sort of processing going on, I think. But yeah, there's just she has this presence that you just know she's going to be a force to be reckoned with.
What about you, MJ?
I'm wondering what she was doing there in the first place. Just hanging out at medical stations?
Well, you know, that's where all the Inquisitors hang out, like all the cool kids.
Because if I was looking for Force Sensitives, I'd go hang out at a completely abandoned medical station. So, you know,
that's, maybe you're an Inquisitor. Aha.
Don't even get started. No idea why she was there. But
I wondered that too. But I think that when the ID-9 Seekers were looking, I think they contacted her and she said, "I'll be right there." So they were apparently close by in that star system.
That's what I assumed. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I was again going with the whole it's a 23-minute kid show. Well, it's just press I believe, and here she comes.
Sure.
You know, had to keep it moving along. I think her voice actually reminded me a lot of Sarah Michelle Gellar's character from was it Cruel Intentions?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which is probably not relatable to a kid show, but in many ways the way she was toying with Ezra. The voice, I was like, that sounds a lot like the same character's voice.
Yeah, that was interesting. And I felt, I don't know about you two, but, and I don't know if you watch this, with the little one, but to me, when Chopper's taken out, that was very disturbing. That like, it was just very, he was just out for the count, that menacing robot or droid. I can't believe I said robot. That menacing droid was hovering over Chopper. I was actually concerned for Chopper's safety, which I think was interesting that they're able to do this to with a character that at first I was kind of like, oh, okay, whatever, but now I think Chopper's awesome. So that was a very powerful little moment too.
You know, as far as droid karma goes though, I mean, if any droid deserves an assault by another droid, it would be Chopper.
Right.
Everybody hates Chopper.
No.
I love Chopper, him. But yeah. He kicked another droid out of a starship, you know, in the last season. I'm just saying, if anyone deserves it, you know, karma-wise, it's just desserts.
MJ, besides the voice and the helmet, what are your overall impressions? Just before we get to the Inquisition scene with Ezra, what are her overall impressions of her fighting style, the way she uses her hands, the grace with which she carries herself, and the menace behind her eyes. Tell me your impressions of her as a character so far.
Between the two of the Seventh Sister and the Fifth Brother, she is she's the scalpel to the Fifth Brother's cudgel. Clearly, she is. Thank you. She's got art and style to her fighting. I think as compared to the Fifth Brother is more of a blunt force guy. I guess it's just what I just said. I thought she was artistic. She was playing. She may have been feeling out his Ezra's capabilities as well. Mm-hmm. The Grand Inquisitor was able to pick out in, you know, 3 seconds or whatever, the Kanan's master was Depa Balaba. Mm-hmm. And the Seventh Sister takes a little bit more style, and she was trying some different techniques from different forms to figure out what Ezra knew, maybe trying to figure out who he had trained with, knowing that he couldn't possibly have been trained at the temple. So who is this Padawan been in contact with? I don't know.
Yeah, the Fifth Brother to me is very much in the vein of Savage Opress, but without the cool Clancy voice. I mean, I do like the Fifth Brother's voice, but yeah.
But, well, then the name of the episode should be "There Could Be Only One."
Exactly. That's what the way. Although, and that it's not even that. I mean, I like that there are two of them, But I'm more intrigued by the Seventh Sister. It probably doesn't hurt that Sarah Michelle Gellar has something to do with it as well.
I know. I just had to go for the cheap Highlander joke there.
Yeah, that's all right. We allow cheap Highlander jokes.
Oh, excellent.
Yes, very good. Jeff, anything else about these two before we move on to the Inquisitions thing?
No, I think you guys said it. Everything I was thinking as well, and I am definitely more intrigued by the Seventh Sister. Because again, just because that character, she just seems the scalpel seems so much more menacing than the cudgel.
Yeah, I like
that. Use MJ's analogy.
That's very good. I really like that the way you dissected that. Mm-hmm.
Oh, ouch!
Yeah, there you go.
Oh,
that said, though, I think that Philip Anthony Rodriguez did a really good job. With the Clancy Brown-ish.
He does
to his voice.
He very much does. And if you get a chance, look at StarWars.com under the Rebels section. When you're not reading the Studying Skywalker's latest, of course, and shameless plug, and you can see they have close-ups of both the designs, and if Corey was here, we could have him look at the designs more from his lens. But it's really neat how that her lightsaber, which is they're both the Inquisitor brand lightsabers, is very much more artistic and almost got like a bit of a not an Aztec quality, but it's got a very unique style to it that I liked as well.
Hey, it's Dan Z.
And Corey Club.
From Coffee with Kenobi. And we are excited to let you know about the Star Wars Card Trader app from Topps.
Yeah, Dan, you remember those cards that came out in 1977, the good old days? Well, they're back again. Yeah, so it's the Star Wars Card Trader app. It has them all, as well as fantastic images from The Force Awakens, The Clone Wars, Rebels, and much more.
Absolutely. You've got your favorite characters, memorable scenes. You've got key moments. It's all there. You get credits every day for free from the app, which is available from iTunes or Google Play. Open packs from the cantina, trade with your friends, and enjoy these amazing Star Wars memories as you take your first step into a larger world.
There are so many different sets to choose from also, and there's so many great cards to chase. There's special inserts, there's rewards for completing sets and variants. It's everything you love in collecting from a galaxy far, far away.
The Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting App from Topps.
These are the cards you're looking for.
Let's get on to the actual Inquisition scene of the Inquisitor.
What a show.
Hey, here we go. We'll stop with that one. So when she taunts Ezra, she says, "Your master never achieved the rank of Jedi," which ironically is something I was thinking about before this episode. But Ezra is so unflappable still. She brings up the fact that the Grand Inquisitor's death was a surprise, but it provided the rest of us with new opportunities. And if you watch Rebels Recon, Pablo says, you know, there's very much a hierarchy here. There's very much a competition between these Inquisitors that we will find out about eventually, which is very, very exciting. He also, by the way, guys, I don't know if you happen to see it, he reveals that the Grand Inquisitor from Season 1, we should recognize from the Clone Wars. And they haven't revealed who that is. It's going to come out slowly as time goes on. But that's kind of interesting, too.
More to think about, we have.
More to add, do you? We also know that she is a Marillion, which is the same species as Barriss Offee and Luminara, but the Seventh Brother species has not yet been revealed in the Star Wars universe either. What did you guys think about her techniques for trying to get information out of Ezra?
Andrea, let's start with you.
Yeah, I know that the Darksiders don't tend towards the Jedi mind trick, if you will. It would have been interesting to see her maybe try something along those lines. She was just using standard interrogation techniques as opposed to force assisted. Would have been neat to see.
It was. What about you, Jeff?
It was creepy to me. It was it was chilling, and this is where I forgot that I was watching a kid's show because. It is. It's that there's that threat of menace that is just sort of hovering in the background. And, you know, Ezra, amazingly, or I guess maybe not so amazingly, since we do love the character, Ezra never really gives in.
No, he doesn't. Even when there's is there only one time when he shows that he's a bit flammable, that happens a little bit later. The fifth brother goes out and he takes out Sabine and Zeb with relative ease, and he tells the droids to do as they will to Zeb. Zeb does eventually get out of it. He has to use his head literally by smashing the ID-9 seeker droids. But then we go back again to the interrogation scene with Ezra. And she says something that I think found really creepy.
Yeah, she said, I love that line.
Is it as pretty as you are? I only need you alive, not in one piece. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Is that the one you're talking about?
Yeah. You love that line. Tell me why.
I just think because it's creepy.
It's very, yeah,
it's creepy. Very creepy. And in a kid's show, that is chilling. I would be, if somebody said that to me, I'd be like, oh my goodness, what are you going to cut off?
Well, I think it's cool how there's like gender reversal here, because Ezra is, quote, the damsel in distress.
Right.
And the seventh sister is calling him pretty, which is not often a term used to describe, you know, a man, you know, unless you're in a, although they did say the word handsome a lot to describe people in the Elizabethan England and things like that. But she very much plays on gender roles in very unique ways, and she's so powerful in the way that she does them. It shows you that she's a tour de force that is not to be taken for granted.
Do you think that her use of, besides the obvious gender thing that you just mentioned there, do you think the pretty comment is also kind of a callback to the Wicked Witch of the West?
I think it is, and she looks like the Wicked Witch of the West, now that you mention it. It's also around the time when she reveals the fact that she knows about Ahsoka.
Right.
Right. So I think there's a little bit of a mirroring there. And Ezra and Ahsoka do have a lot of similarities to them. So that speaks to me a little bit.
Interesting that if I'm not mistaken, they didn't ask once about where's Kanan.
That's right.
I think the bigger fish to fry that people have been talking about with Ahsoka having her other missions and bigger fish to fry is the same thing here. Their boss, Vader, not too horribly concerned with Kanan right now.
That's right.
They can get Kanan anytime.
That's right. Jeff, anything else on this one?
No, like I said, I think you guys kind of nailed it. And it was interesting. I didn't think about the fact that they never say much about Kanan. It's all about Ahsoka. And I guess we assume that they know Kanan exists. I assume that she's not referring to Ahsoka when she says your master never achieved the rank of.
No, she knows exactly.
Okay, so she knows it's Kanan.
Yeah.
So that
yeah.
was the only thing that I was thinking maybe, but I guess you're probably right.
Because Ahsoka's also been in hiding. I mean, you know, she's Fulcrum, and they don't even know that is Fulcrum. So she's very much a mystery. Although the only reason that they know is because Vader sensed her.
Yeah, I'm wondering also with the Inquisitor's knowledge of their historical knowledge of the Jedi. I mean, Ahsoka, though she never rose to the rank of knight, again, fought alongside two of the greatest Jedi masters of the time. Mm-hmm. And whether or not she made knight or not, you'd have to assume that she was a fairly powerful force user.
Oh, absolutely. And she's had, you know, 10 plus years to hone her skills. And she fought very successfully in the Clone Wars. And she could have been a Jedi. And she was offered the title and she walked mm-hmm. away. So she has clearly that skill and that prowess, and she's the biggest threat to the Sith right there, and they know that. So that's why they are trying to get to Ezra. Ezra's reaction to when he thinks Sabine might be hurt is pretty quick, and this is the only time to me that he shows a bit of a flaw, and it's not a flaw. It shows that he's human. Do you remember what it was that where he shows a little bit of weakness when he's being interrogated?
Yeah, he's just about to reveal a little bit of information because he's afraid they're going to hurt her. Is that what you're talking about?
It says, like, you know, he says, you know, she says, like, your friends are going to die. And he says, I'm growing more powerful every day. Like, he's pretty much saying, no, you shouldn't mess with me because I'm going to get stronger and I'm going to get stronger, which is very honestly more like Anakin than anything we usually see out of Ezra.
I think he's just panicking. Yeah.
And if it's a 16-year-old's reaction to a very stressful situation.
Right.
Well, of course it is, but it also shows, again, his humanity. And they are putting little candy corns out there for us to ingest that, you know, maybe he will step into the dark side a little bit. I still don't believe that's going to happen. But if it does show, everybody has to have some sort of a weakness, some sort of an Achilles heel, and that's his, and I think it's going to be interesting to follow that and see what happens.
Now, if he'd conjured up a huge Mama Fear knock at that exact moment, then we would know that he was on to some dark side stuff.
Yeah, that would be problematic at best, at worst. So Zeb shows up, and Zeb has a bit of an interesting conflict in the last 10 minutes or so of this episode that I enjoyed. I did love the actual escape, and you know, what is it? What General Melrune? What? How does he pronounce? What is the title he gives himself?
I think it's Commander.
Commander, yes.
Right.
To call back to the fruits. I was really interested by the fact that he says everyone seems to know what's going on these days, and he's very unsure of himself, unsure of his role, but he figures it out really quickly, and that is through rescuing his friends. Let's talk about this this rescue scene and everything that happened there. MJ, let's start with you.
I think it's like one of those watered down, let's get these people out really quickly. You know, I think it's odd that Sabine and Ezra are whispering to one another, nodding up at the ceiling. And it, again, like a lot of shows where the kids know what's going on, but the adults are idiots.
Mm-hmm.
So they can, even though they have two Force sensitives who can hear these whispering children nodding at the ceiling, they don't recognize that there's somebody up on the ceiling there.
That was one part that bugged me as well.
Yes. It rattled me a bit, but like you just said, you know, the adults in this one are so arrogant and so unconcerned with the real threat of the power of a child, the power of a creative mind that has not been tainted or jaded, that they take for granted what's going on. They don't even acknowledge their existence because they're so focused on what they're doing. Undermining your enemy, your opponent, is always detrimental, and clearly it is here as well. And Zeb seems to have quite a bit of fun rescuing them. Jeff, you had something about the score. I know that you liked.
Well, yeah, it just there's a trill in this sequence when they're trying to get out, when they're having sort of the forced tug of war, that sounded like the theme to the Goonies. You remember the sequence where they're down in the wishing well? I watched it twice, and both times I had to stop and go, is that? I had to listen really closely to make sure that wasn't something they lifted from Dave Grusin.
Oh, good. I like that. That's cool. It's Zeb's rescue is exciting. The scene where they're both using the Force to try to stop the ship and get them from escaping, they're closing the hangar doors, was very exciting. Why do you think they failed?
Because they weren't working together.
Yep. I think that's the big takeaway message there. If they'd been on the same track, they would have worked just fine.
Well, she called it out. She said, I can't hold it alone. And he was too busy deflecting, you know, blaster fire.
I love that. I don't know. I missed that. I was too busy wrapped up in the fact that, oh, Vader would have stopped it right away. But you're right. Of course, it didn't get to that. And it isn't until Zeb takes on the role of protector and he does something where he's involved that he's able to find success in kind of get his mojo back, so to speak. So they end up going back to the ghost, and before they actually interact with one another and fill him in on what's going on, we see the end of this little confrontation between Kanan and Rex, and Kanan's quote defeat of Rex end quote in Dejarik, and Rex's reaction to this. I love it so much. And Kanan says, I'm not sure if I like you more or less now. That was a great little moment.
Hmm.
And this plays back to what we said at the top of the show, which is Rex is clearly trying to assert himself in a very respectful, direct way. But he also very much is like the mentor, too, which is pretty cool. He's mentoring and teaching Kanan lessons. And Kanan's like, well, dang. He is teaching me something. I'm not sure if I love this or I don't, but it was a nice insight into his character and shows that they're going to have a refreshing way to look at this conflict between the two. MJ, what do you think about all that?
Well, I think at the end of season one, we wondered if Ahsoka was going to be able to help mentor Kanan. And I think, as I mentioned earlier, with Rex having been privy to some of the strategic decisions made by Kenobi and, Anakin during the Clone Wars, I think that Kanan could learn an awful lot from Rex as well, especially if they're, although Kanan does not want to fight a war, the fact remains that he's probably going to have to, and he doesn't know a whole lot about fighting a war. if I remember correctly, he only had from the comics, he only had that one campaign on Kalar. Mm-hmm. So he doesn't really know a lot about that.
Good point. Jeff, what about you?
I think MJ's right. I think Kanan is going to need to swallow his pride a little bit and realize that he can learn something from Rex. And I think Rex is going to realize that. I think they're going to figure one another out. And I think we saw a little bit of that here. It's a nice mm-hmm. sort of foreshadowing of them forming a relationship that's going to be helpful.
And it's also neat, too, the fact that Kanan appears open to it. He's right. not closed-minded. He's open to it, which his biochemistry is such that he's open to this change. He's more malleable than he's not set in stone with his views, which I think is one of the reasons why he's such a refreshing character. When Ezra shows up and he tells him what's going on, you know, Sabine acknowledges first that they never would have escaped without Zeb. And Zeb replies, where before he was saying, you know, I did this, it was all me. He says, no, it was a team effort. They very much, when they need to, they're all grown up and they're all mature. And they acknowledge, like you both said, when they escape from the Inquisitors, that they work together and there's no pride here. There's just survival. There's friendship. There's loyalty. And there's success because of that. But then they get a little upset with Kanan. He doesn't really get a chance to explain himself. I'm assuming it's because he was in shock. But there's some debate, isn't there, gentlemen, about who knew what about these Inquisitors? And what did Kanan know?
That was the thing, is we didn't get any indication about what he might actually have known just from this exchange. So I don't know if we're going to find more out later or if we're going to find that maybe Ahsoka knew something else, because we've already figured out that she hasn't told them everything.
MJ, what about you?
I think I read earlier someplace that someone pointed out that the animation, as different as it is, less expensive in Rebels than in the Clone Wars, someone pointed out that Kanan's face is fairly expressive.
Yes.
given the limits of the graphics. I thought that Kanan, I kind of want him to, you know, hey, buck up, Tiger. It's going to be okay, because you know, Mama Hera swung in and patted him on the shoulder like he had just lost his dog or something when he found out that there were more Inquisitors. I mean, it's a shared problem. It's not Kanan's problem. So I thought it was interesting with the space marriage being what it is that she went in to comfort Kanan, seeing as that it's a problem for all of them.
Which is why she's such a great character, because she takes these traditional gender roles and she's so heroic and so vulnerable, but so strong. And I love that about her. And this is actually a scene that I thought was why this show is so great and why it works on so many myriad levels, because Kanan does. I did notice in this scene more than, like you said, I'm glad you brought up the animation, because this, he reminded me of Woody from Toy Story, especially in the 2 and 3.
Does.
Yeah. More so in that.
Forward.
Yes, and like he's very real, and you can just kind of feel his soul and his conscience and how he is, like the wind is taken out of his sails. And yes, it's a shared problem, but it affects Kanan more than does any of them on a more personal level because of his experiences, and she knows that better than anybody. And he didn't know about the Inquisitors. He's very honest about, look, I didn't know that they were out there. I didn't know there were more. Now, why he doesn't tell them right away, I think it's because he felt emotionally like he was punched in the gut and it took the wind out of his sails. But they do let him know, like they know about Ahsoka. And then there's some debate, you know, and they ask Rex, does Ahsoka know about these Inquisitors? And he says he honestly doesn't know. And it left on a very reflective, somber, pensive note, which I thought was a nice way to end this pretty strong episode. So, guys, before we give our final grades, any last-minute thoughts or reflections on Always Two There Are? And MJ, let's start with you.
Just off that last point, it would have been pretty neat, maybe a little over the top, if Hera had draped a blanket over Kanan's shoulders at that point, a la Leia comforting Luke after after Kenobi dying.
Right.
But it wasn't my favorite episode to be sure. There are other things that I like better. Obviously, as my name implies, I'm mediocre Jedi, not mediocre TIE fighter pilot. I like seeing the Jedi. I like seeing the Force at work, and I like seeing that grand sort of thing. I like to see heroism. And I think we had the kids running around taking care of business. It's necessary to move the plot for the season along, but it wasn't my cup of tea.
Jeff, what about you?
It was my cup of tea, as I said before. I really enjoyed this one. MJ, I see why you didn't like it, and I get why you didn't like it. I just really enjoyed the ride. I guess that's what it boils down to for me, is I just had a lot of fun with this one. This is more of what I was hoping for with the first couple of episodes that we got when we came back from the hiatus, even though I did really enjoy the episode right before this one. But this was more what I was expecting after the end of last season, and so I'm hoping that we get more of this later on this season.
I enjoyed this one for a lot of reasons. I mean the Jedi is my favorite part. Anytime there's a lightsaber, I'm happy. I like that there's emphasis on Zeb and Ezra and Sabine, just the three of them without the comfort of Mama and Papa Bear, which I thought was effective. I like the emphasis on teamwork. I like the emphasis of strategy and working together. And I like the ideas of that trope that is so prevalent in literature of the adults underestimate the power and the wisdom and the knowledge of kids. So I thought that was effective. It wasn't my favorite episode either, but it's far from ahem mediocre to me. So guys, let's do our final grades on this. I'm going to start with this one. I'm going to give this one a B+. It's a very, very strong B+. It teeters on the A, but for all the hype for seeing the seventh sister and the fifth brother, it was cool. It was exciting, but to me, nothing is as unique as the Grand Inquisitor. And I'm sorry, when you've had Darth Vader already in season two, nothing even comes close to that for me. So while I did enjoy it, it was a nice, strong episode, but it was just a B+. MJ, what about you?
It's not that I dislike it. So that's my disclaimer right there. So when I say I'm giving it a B-, I don't want to make it sound like I'm all over the place. I'm not a teacher. But I'm going to give it a B-.
No, it's consistent. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, it's still Star Wars. It's still exciting. It's not like this is not the episode that I'm going to pull up off the Blu-ray, you know, at the end of the season and watch continuously.
Right.
If the two Inquisitors show up and they really make a complete mess out of capturing a couple kids and an honor guard who is, you know, prone to silly hijinks, if they can't do it, the element of fear just really wasn't there, despite the seventh sister's creepiness and the fifth brother's brute force. For all the reasons that you mentioned it, the people working together and obviously Zeb saving the day, which is a nice thing to see his character kind of come in and help out. I did like all that, but I'm still going to give it a B-.
And Jeff, what about you?
I'm going to give this one an A-, which is just slightly above Dan's B+. Again, I did think that the shift in tone from the beginning to the end was a little abrupt, and then a couple of the shortcuts, like, you know, them not being able to hear Zeb in the ship or the whispering, it was a little troublesome. But overall, again, I just enjoyed the ride. I liked that we got to see so many of the characters do something, because so many of these episodes tend to focus on one or two characters. Getting to see all four of these crew members interact here, along with meeting the new Inquisitors, it's sort of like a preview of what may be to come in this season, and I just really enjoyed it.
Very good. Well, our next episode of Rebels Reactions will be coming soon, and it's going to be looking at Brothers of the Broken Horn, and we sure had a wonderful time finally getting a chance to catch up with Mediocre Jedi and have a cup of coffee with him. So before we ask you our five questions, which of course we have to do, where can everyone listen to you or reach out to you if they want to ask you a question or just say hello?
I am on Twitter from time to time, as in every few minutes, at Mediocre Jedi. And you can also find me blogging monthly for a little website called coffeewithkenobi.com.
Yes, and you are awesome. and we are so happy you're in the Coffee with Kenobi family. Your blogs have a great, unique insight, and Jeff's too. You guys both bring a lot to the table, so it really is a nice blessing for me that I can share in this experience with you too. So I appreciate it, guys.
As do I. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. So, Jeff, it's time, my friend, isn't it?
It is time.
You want to ask him the first one?
Sure. MJ?
Mm-hmm.
Very simply, what is your favorite Star Wars movie?
Empire.
That was easy.
Just like that.
Yep. Just like that.
Who or what is your favorite character?
Kenobi. Just like that. I think Kenobi, for all his faults. And if I can throw a quick plug for Trisha Barge's latest article in Star Wars Insider. She does a great job talking about Kenobi despite his faults. And I know we talk about this a lot, but yes, saying he was a liar is pretty harsh. But, you know, from a certain point of view, you know, he was in a tough situation, but and he's seen a lot. But I think at the end of the day, you can get down to it. You know, the road to hell may be paved with good intentions, but he was always trying to do the right thing despite his own insecurities at times. Was he ready to train Anakin? Probably not. But he made a deal. He promised Qui-Gon. Was he ready? Did he take care of Luke properly? Should he have changed his or Luke's last names? That's all, you know, water under the bridge at this point. But Kenobi's a great character.
I agreed. So he also has some of the best lines in the film, some of the most memorable.
Oh, sure.
Do you have a favorite line of dialogue or film moment?
This is kind of a broad one. The Dagobah scene in general, when Yoda is explaining the Force to Luke, and Luke is dejected. He doesn't think he can do it. And then Yoda shows him that despite his small stature, that he can do it just fine. That's actually one of the few Star Wars moments, on-screen moments, that I've let my son watch. My son has never watched Clone Wars. He's never watched Rebels. And he has only seen he's seen that part a couple times. I'm very hesitant to expose him to any sort of violence, whether it be bloodless or not. And I have my reasons for that.
Oh, I applaud you for that. I think that's even every day, like when I'm watching TV with my son, like right now we're Curious George and Daniel Tiger, and I want to show him stuff from Star Wars or whatever, but I'm thinking, well, even like I show him the old Max Fleischer Superman cartoons, they shoot at him, and I'm thinking, do I want my son to be exposed to this already? So I'm glad to hear you say that. That's very comforting to me.
Can I segue a little bit on that?
Please do.
The thing is that I don't feel comfortable. And for me, obviously my own life experience being what it is, if we were watching, the scene when, in the beginning of A New Hope, and the rebel troopers are defending the Tantive IV, mm-hmm. and, you know, they and the stormtroopers are falling, and he says, well, Daddy, what's happening? And I didn't feel comfortable when I said, well, buddy, they're getting knocked over. They're falling down. And I don't want him to think that war is bloodless and that they'll all just dust themselves off and get back up later. Maybe it's, again, based on my own experiences or the fact that he is, you know, we live in a Marine Corps town, and he goes to daycare on a Marine Corps base. And we see enough of that. And I don't want him to think that it's just all fun and games. It's not.
Right. Very well said. A very important angle to look at for this as well. So we'll transition back. If you collect, what is your favorite collectible that you own?
I'm not much of a collector, but 2 years ago, my mom said, hey, you know what? We were in the basement and we found some of your old Star Wars stuff. And I flipped out. And I've got the Empire Strikes Back storybook, the one that's got
You
know, Vader on the cover at Bespin. And I was so excited, and it's got my mom always made sure to inscribe things in the books when she gave it to us, because I was 5 when Empire came out, and I wasn't going to get to see it the first weekend that she and my dad and my brother saw it, for whatever the reason was, because they wanted to make sure that it would be okay for me. And so they got me the book to make me feel better about it. And that was the first movie the first Star Wars movie I saw in the theater. But it was just so neat to see that.
As I have a lot of great memories of those books, so I'll share another time. But yeah, that That's great. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's I love mine as well. And the pop-up book as well.
Mm-hmm.
I actually, last time I was there visiting my parents, I went down to the basement and I rescued a couple more books, one of which was the Empire Strikes Back novelization. Mm-hmm. It was really neat to see one of the Yoda scenes when he's training Luke with the seeker droids. It was neat to see Jason Fry do that in Weapon of a Jedi. Was that Weapon of a Jedi? Yeah, in the seeker droids. And so basically I asked Jason Fry about that, and he said, yes, it was intentional that they kind of did a callback to that deleted scene from Empire.
Nice. What particular messages or themes about the Star Wars saga resonate or speak to you?
I'm thinking hard about this.
Yeah, I notice you don't have a quick answer for that one.
That's right.
No, you know, well, and the thing is that I thought about the five questions. Like every time I hear y'all ask someone, I didn't think about it this time, though. So you're getting the real deal. I think some of it is because in many ways, everyone's got the Force in them one way or another. And that we are all interconnected. We are, we're luminous beings, and our connection with one another and with nature, it's very important. And I don't know about y'all, but you know, when you go out to, we traveled out to Yosemite not too long ago, and there's just something about standing on a mountaintop in the woods, and you suddenly feel such a great connection to nature. And I think in the real world, that's about that. And love and connection to others and the great feeling you get when you help other people out. That's what the Force is. And I think we all can access that if we really want to.
Wonderful. A very poignant, beautiful way to look at it. Mediocre Jedi, it's been such a pleasure having you on Coffee with Kenobi and here in Rebels Reactions. We will certainly have you on in the future. And
hey, fantastic.
Of course. And we look forward again to seeing what you come up with on your blog for Coffee with Kenobi, as well as your hijinks, your daily hijinks on Twitter. Thanks again, my friend, for being on and having a cup of coffee with us.
Well, thank you, Dan. Thank you, Jeff. Really appreciate it. You made me feel right at home as I drank my coffee out of my Coffee with Kenobi mug and wore my Jedi robe. So I appreciate being here.
Well, kid, you pulled it off.
Was there ever any doubt?
Yes.
Chopper, get us out of here.
If you would like to respond to our question of the show, have a comment, or just want to say hello, send us an email or MP3 at feedback@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or if you have a specific question or comment for either of us individually, email us at danz@coffeewithkenobi.com or coreyc@coffeewithkenobi.com, or visit us at coffeewithkenobi.com and click on the Contact Us section or comment on one of the stories featured on the site. If you enjoy the show, please write a review in iTunes or Stitcher. You can also like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/coffeewithkenobi, as well as keep up to date at our Twitter feed @coffeewithkenobi. You can also find us on Tumblr @coffeewithkenobi.tumblr.com. If you enjoy the jazz music, the album is Eye to Eye by Steve Torak.
This is Spectre One. I need a lift.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars-related items are registered trademarks and/or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here. Move along.
From Topps comes the all-new digital card collecting app, free to download from iTunes or Google Play, Star Wars Card Trader.
For the first time ever, collect and trade everything from legendary 1977 Star Wars cards to new cards featuring exclusive content from Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens.
All from the comfort of your mobile devices, Star Wars Card Trader.
These are the cards you're looking for.